your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be taking your calls, and we'll be responding to your email questions. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Good. Yourself?
I'm busy.
Busy? What are you doing?
And conditioning wants to tell me that something wrong with that.
Oh, yeah, because we would rather be bored.
Yeah. And bouncing back and forth between bored and busy.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's kind of what goes on, isn't it?
That's what it sounds like.
Oh, I'm too busy. I don't want to be so busy. Oh, I don't have anything to do. Oh, I'm too busy. Oh, I don't have enough to do.
Yes.
Yeah, of course, there are people out there who say, I would never say I don't have enough to do, but that's only because they're people who arrange their lives so that they're never without a lot to do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Great.
But fortunately, you're able to hear the voices of conditioning and not believe them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the practice.
That's the practice.
Sometimes yeah. I believe them, sometimes I don't.
Right. Sometimes I hear them, sometimes I am them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And thank goodness for practice.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd just be bored and then busy and then bored and then busy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bored, stressed, bored, stressed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But as long as we have awareness practice to do, we
yes.
don't actually have to be either one.
Yes.
We can just be awareness, aware of what's going on. And practicing that, at least in my experience, is endlessly entertaining.
Yes. Yes. Not to mention relaxing, fun, exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a good deal.
It's a good deal. And it's a good deal. We have a caller.
Good.
I'd like to welcome Jeffrey from Philadelphia. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
I wanted to report back.
Very good.
To you. I called, I don't know, about a month or so ago, and was talking about how I had recently met this guy, mm-hmm. that we started dating, and his opinion of me was much more important than mine was,
mm-hmm.
my opinion of me. And I got to see over the past month how that doesn't work at all.
Yeah, but that doesn't add that special quality to a relationship that conditioning would have you believe it can add.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it was I'm very grateful for the practice because I was able to come back to the breath and have some times when I was okay.
Yeah. To be able to see what the difference is.
Yeah, and that something like that was not available to me before doing this practice. So,
mm-hmm. Right, just be gone for whatever period of time and then...
Totally believing the story and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember what exactly we talked about when we talked last time, but it's so easy for us to forget that we meet somebody and what they're attracted to is who we are before we get involved with someone and go completely neurotic.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, you meet somebody and you're a strong, independent person with your own life and excited and enjoying things, and then you become needy and clingy and terrified and paranoid, and it's like, what happened to the person that I got involved with?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
What's your suggestion about how not to do that?
Well, of course, suggestion number one is what you're doing, practice. You know, you practice staying present. So, again, what we do when something new happens, whether it's a new relationship or a job or, you know, whatever that kind of new exciting activity is, we let go of awareness practice. And then what happens, of course, is conditioned mind takes over our lives. So to make sure that you continue to practice awareness, and probably instead of less than usual, it needs to be more than usual during exciting times.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't want to because I'm happy, I'm in love, this is thrilling, this is wonderful. Why would I want to meditate at a time like this? I want to save meditation for when I'm miserable and suffering. But if we stay conscious and present, even in these very thrilling times, then we really increase our chances of, again, remaining the person that that person was attracted to, which adds a lot to the relationship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I noticed a couple of things recently. There's a part of me, because the particular relationship's not working, so we're not doing it anymore. And there's a part of me that I noticed that feels that things are not worthwhile if I'm doing them by myself.
Yeah. Yeah, that you're not enough.
Right. Like, I made dinner for myself tonight, and the voices were telling me that's not, if there's nobody to notice that you've made it, you know?
Yeah. And, of course, the real information about that is there is someone to notice. The only person who I'm ever actually going to be aware of noticing what I'm doing is me.
Hmm.
And, of course, you know, I mean, we know this stuff intellectually, but it's so hard to get the emotional piece in place. You know, if I'm not enough for me, why would anybody else think I was enough for them?
Right.
We know that, right? And it just makes good sense. It's just logical. And yet we start listening to the voices of conditioning, and, you know, it's always the case, no matter what the content is. They say they are doing what they're doing to accomplish X, and they are, in fact, doing what they're doing to accomplish exactly the opposite. So they're not talking to you so that you'll have a happy relationship that you really enjoy. They're saying these things to you so that you won't have a happy relationship, so that they can continue to abuse you.
Yes.
Yeah. So the answer is, hey, I'm here. I'm the most important person to me in any relationship. So I'm going to practice being that person for me, with me, and then if somebody else comes along and realizes what a bargain there is here, then they'll join in, and we'll see. We'll see if that's something we want to do or not.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
There's another thing that I noticed, that this person and I happen to live in the same neighborhood, and there's a lot of fear about running into him or anything that a lot of it has to do with feeling like it's all my fault.
Uh-huh.
And like anything that is a reminder of him or seeing him would just trigger, it would just be proof that I'm a terrible, terrible person.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Now, that sort of thing can be turned around to work in your favor. So if every time there's a thought about the relationship, every time the voices that want to talk to you about what you did wrong or how you failed or you screwed it up or whatever it is, if that became a signal to you to come back to the present, come back to the breath, come back to reminding yourself who you are and what's true and what's real, like I'm a great person, and I'm always doing the best that I can do, and, you know, I'm practicing as much awareness as I can have, and when I have more, I'll have more. You know, whatever, not pie-in-the-sky stuff, but just plain old, this is the truth. So every time one of those thoughts or those voices comes up about what you've done wrong, you just say, oh, that's right, I need to take care of and reassure that guy who gets a little anxious and insecure around relationships.
Mm.
So now you're going to, you know, after a while, you're going to start looking for this fellow. Because, you know, just to see if you can get something to trigger it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm assuming I can use that every time the voices want to tell me what he did wrong. And
Anything.
External stuff, yeah.
Yeah, anything. Anytime. You can do it anytime the voices are talking to you, period. Even if they're saying things like, you really better stop at the store on the way home because otherwise, okay? Oh, right. Thank you. I need to come back to the breath. Then you might also make a note about what you're going to buy at the grocery store. But let everything be a reminder to come back to the present and come back to the breath.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes. Thank you so much.
And then we'll get another report.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Jeffrey.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jeffrey. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, it looks like it's going to be the All Pennsylvania show tonight.
Well, isn't that good?
We have three on hold from Pennsylvania.
Oh, and we love Pennsylvania.
We love Pennsylvania.
The thing about it is, Michael, we have to remember to talk a little bit about the bridge walk before we hang up.
Hey, okay. Why don't we make some time now?
Well, we can do it later. I hate to have people hanging on all the way from Pennsylvania.
Okay, I'll put it in my list to make note of.
All right.
I'd like to welcome William from Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening, William.
Hello, Sherry. How are you?
Doing good, thanks. Yourself?
I'm hanging in there.
Oops, what's going on?
Well, I as well am calling back to report in. I called in last week, so this is a really quick call back. So
quick report.
Not a whole lot to say. Mostly I wanted to call in just to kind of keep the contact and basically say what I did do and maybe even bring up something else. But last week we spoke, I spoke with you about really identifying most of the time, especially lately, with this scared child that's in me.
Yes.
And not having real access to a mentor.
Uh-huh.
And you made a suggestion to do the dominant hand, non-dominant hand, and I did do that, and as well as I've been listening kind of through this period as I've been, dealing with my depression in a different way. I've been very grateful that there's a lot of resources that you and Living Compassion offers, with especially like the archives. So I've been listening to quite a number of those, and I came across one that there are a couple individuals that shared similar situations talking about a mentor, and I think it was back in January of this past January. So you had mentioned to them, too, that idea of a voice that can kind of reassure, that can say, I'm with you, you're doing okay, I'm here. And to practice doing that even when you're not, when you don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
So reporting back was that this week I did kind of those two things. Listening to that, I started to, at times while driving or at other moments, start saying those things to myself. I used some of the ones you used because they were they sounded great.
Uh-huh.
And I often have... I don't always trust the ones I come up with. and then I also did the dominant hand, non-dominant hand. And the only thing I can say about that is that I guess pretty much the child's part was speaking, and he was just really sharing how terrified he is.
Mm-hmm.
And
did your heart kind of go out to him?
Yes. I think the one thing I noticed that when I put it back in my dominant hand in reply, there is an element, yes, of my heart going out to him. I think the other thing, and maybe this is just because it's a new practice for me, that mentor doesn't feel a lot of confidence. he feels a little, he's like, I don't know how to help this little kid that much. I don't trust myself to help him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure how many voices are getting confused in there, but
Well, I can tell you one. There's somebody who is attempting to do the mentoring, and you haven't actually gotten to the mentor yet.
Yeah.
Because the mentor is definitely not someone who lacks confidence. So, you know, you just keep practicing and stay with it. Keep your attention on it. And pretty soon you'll hear a voice, and you may hear is in quotes. So you may hear it inside your head. You may sense it, feel it, you know, a knowing, that sort of thing. But you will get that there is a mentoring presence there, and it's unlike anything you've ever experienced.
Okay.
In that, you know, it's not outside of you, and yet it feels so different from what's usually there that it seems like it's coming from outside of you.
Okay.
Yeah. So just, it's the practicing and staying open to it. That's you're creating an opening for that presence to be available to you. You know, it's always there. It's not like you're bringing in something new or you're creating something. It's much deeper, actually, than what we're accustomed to living with, being with, having access to. So you're really opening that doorway, and that mentoring presence is going to just be there.
Okay.
And once that happens, then it's a matter of repeating it. You know, then you just, you know, you go out and sit down in some pretty place and just sit there and breathe and wait for that information to come through. And you can do things like ask specific questions, you know. I'm really concerned about this, and just watch how the wisdom and compassion appears to you.
And so the exercise of the dominant hand, non-dominant hand, is that one that you would stay with?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's really two reasons. One, it's putting you in touch with that child in a, it sounds like, fairly disidentified way. And so letting him be there, and then also seeing who else is there. You know, there's somebody there who's willing to do the job. He's not really certain that he's qualified, but he's going to give it a shot.
Right.
And that's a great person to get to know.
Okay.
Yeah. But the thing we know is he's willing and he's kind. That's a
nice
good friend to have.
Pardon me? I was saying that's nice to know. It's easier to hear it from you.
Uh-huh.
I don't get there myself.
Yeah, but when you reflect back on the interactions with that young terrified child, that child is there and speaking, letting himself be seen because there's safety.
Right.
He feels safe enough to be there.
I guess just one sort of thing I wanted to throw out that don't necessarily need to go into at this point, but maybe in some other call. But I mentioned last week that, you know, I've been around my family of origin a lot recently, and in fact, really kind of slipped into an enmeshment that I hadn't been in for a while. And it seems like this little kid is really, I mean, I'm seeing those as related, that how kind of terrified I'm feeling right now is very linked to how enmeshed I'm getting with my family of origin, at least.
Yeah, and do you need to do that?
To be enmeshed with them?
Yeah.
My rational mind says no, but there's a part of me that is really kind of trapped in it.
It's not a situation where your mother is dying or you know, some hideous thing is going on where it just feels like now is the time to be in closer relationship.
Oh, no, nothing like that.
Okay, so I think that would just be an excellent practice. to begin to consider. Now, how close do they live to where you live?
It involves my younger brother and my parents, mostly, who I'm sort of involved with right now. And they're within 20 minutes from where I live.
Okay. That makes it trickier, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It'd be nice if they were like 5 hours away. But just to begin to watch inside yourself as you start to consider limiting your contact with these folks. Not doing anything, not making any big statements, but just starting that conversation. And that, again, can be the dominant, non-dominant hand conversation.
Okay.
And begin to kind of negotiate. What's a reasonable amount of time to spend with them? How often? Just begin to look at limiting it. And let me know what you see.
Okay, I will.
Good.
Thank you, Sherry.
You're welcome, William. Good night.
All right, good night. Bye, Michael.
Bye. Thanks for joining us, William. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
From,
I'll give you one guess. I'd like to welcome Beth from Pittsburgh. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Good evening, Beth.
Hi, Sherry.
How's it going?
Well, we have a bridge walk event here in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
We're holding a rummage sale this weekend.
Isn't that exciting?
Well, you should see this mountain of stuff. It's pretty amazing. We have a first-class chair from the SS Amsterdam for sale, if anybody's interested. All going for a good cause.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really kind of amazing. The whole practice within it.
Uh-huh.
Somebody in the Sangha donated a tape set. They're going kind of upgrading technology kind of thing. And I've been furiously listening to it before the sale happens, and I have to let it go. This is it's one of your talks that you've given, and I am not a leader. I have no interest in being a leader. I need a leader to follow, to find where my grounding is.
Mm-hmm.
And so this has been a lot of stuff has been coming up with this, all these different kind of levels with it. And I'm kind of had a realization earlier in the week that, you know, like a caterpillar needs to struggle out of the cocoon, a chick needs to struggle out of the egg in order to hatch, and if they don't struggle, they die. My conditioning does not struggle.
Well, now, I just want to clarify something.
Okay.
We don't know that it's a struggle. They have to get out.
They have to get out.
I think struggle would be probably what we would project onto it.
They have to work to do it.
Well, they have to do it.
They have to do it.
They have to accomplish this task.
Okay, so this rummage sale is happening this weekend, and there's quite a few details. I could spend, 15 hours a day in the next couple of days accomplishing all this. And what I noticed, like, this evening, just the tendency just to go to bed, just to go to sleep.
Mm.
Just to, you know...
It's too hard, it's too much, it's...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to fail anyway.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing to me. Conditioning has no interest in allowing to be done what needs to be done to make this a success. It would have...
It has no interest in it being a success.
Pardon me?
It has no interest in it being a success.
No. But it
nobody's going to come to the sale, and I have to move all this stuff out of there by next Wednesday.
Yeah. It would have endless amounts of energy to beat you up after it had talked you into this being a failure.
Yes. Into causing it to be a failure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just kind of recognizing, in this tape you were talking to somebody about sickening dread.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit. When I was listening to it, I understood it.
Well, sickening dread is, sickening dread is along the lines, I was just at a workshop this weekend, and this woman was talking along, and what she was What she was trying to say is that she's considering the possibility of applying to the monastery to be a monk. And she couldn't say it. She would get partway through, and then she couldn't say to go to the monastery to be a monk. And so she would just come up with all these odd phrasings to try not to hear herself say that, or try not to say that. So sickening dread is knowing that you're going. You're going. There's no question about it. There's no way out of it. It's not that anybody's making you. It's just that you no longer have a choice about this. And it brings up in conditioning, you know, all sorts of anxiety and fear and dread and all of that sort of thing. So it's the woman who said to me years ago, what I've realized is I can't go anywhere in this practice until I become a vegetarian. And she said, not that you're putting pressure on me to be a vegetarian. You don't know what I eat, but I know it's what I need to do. I know that's what I need to do, and I don't want to.
Okay.
Sickening dread.
I've been experiencing, like, every morning, I'm waking up in this sickening dread, and I sit, and then I go on with the day, and it comes and it goes, and...
And is it about this yard sale?
Oh, the larger story, just where am I going in my life, where am I going in my practice, you know, it's kind of like I know the next step, and I don't want to go there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sickening dread.
I've got, you know, like this whole story about what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it means I have to give up everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. And, you know, there's all these things in my life that I'm really attracted to. You were talking about that with the earlier caller.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was with Michael. Just, you know, things being interesting to boring.
Mm-hmm.
So I was hearing that, you know, just, it's, you know, there's these things that I'm attracted to.
Yeah,
and I don't want to give them up.
That's right. The thing about it is, conditioning makes everything in life that it can make miserable, miserable. Right?
Yeah, yes.
Just like the rummage sale. You know, it wants to ruin it, to make it hard and miserable and overwhelming and a failure before it's even happened.
Yes.
But then when we talk about something like doing monastic practice, suddenly the world is a grand and glorious place that conditioning cannot imagine being separated from.
I've had both those experiences.
Yeah.
I've had it where I'm absolutely in love with my life in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And I've had it where my life...
usually when you're getting ready to go to the monastery, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Or just when I come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it fades away, and then what conditioning is doing is focusing on what's wrong, and there's not enough of this, and this isn't working, and...
And I have to give that up, and I can't have my rugs, and I can't, you know...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the... Yeah. All of that.
Yep.
And I'm failing. I'm back at the beginning.
Well, I think it's like a spiral staircase. We're never actually back at the beginning, but it can feel that way.
If there is no beginning, there is no end. There is no...
That's right. Yeah. So we're just going around and around and around and around. And we do move into greater and greater subtlety.
There are some elements of my life that have just completely fallen apart. I have a cleaning service, and if I lose a client, it's not that big of a deal because another one will come along.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like if I lose one, I've still got 12 others to earn from.
Mm-hmm.
But I went through a period where I lost four. And all this stuff is coming up about my ability to survive, and it's all my fault, and, you know, it's like I can't survive on my own.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you say, well, you know, I think I'll just give it up then and just go to the monastery and just be a monk for a while. And then it really goes into high gear.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
I have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah. So that's what we can know. Conditioning, the voices are always going to be doing their dissatisfaction, distress, routine. And the content changes, and they just apply the same information to whatever is currently up in life. That's what we can know. That's what they do. That's what they've always done. That's what they always will do. And we will never change that. It's just like if you walk in and you take a certain CD down and you put it in the player, it's going to play what's on there. No matter how good a person you are, how much work you do, how hard you try, how you hold your mouth, it's not going to play something different.
It's not going to, yes.
It's just not.
Well, it hasn't been 41 years.
And unlike the CD, with conditioning, you can't smash it.
Or choose a different CD.
You can choose a different CD. But when you pick that original one and put it in there, that's what's going to play.
The one that's coming up strongest and it's at the undercurrent of every morning is that I'm all alone.
Right. Well, and of course, that is what ego wants to believe. That is what it wants you to believe. If you stop and think about it for a split second, nobody is alone. Only ego is invested in believing that that is the case.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So yes. If we listen to ego, then that's how it seems. The moment we're not listening to ego, our absolute interconnectedness with all of life is so obvious, it's impossible to imagine how we ever thought anything else.
It really is amazing that anybody comes to this practice.
For me, it's amazing that everyone doesn't do it.
That's true, too.
All right. Take care. Let us know how sale goes.
Thank you.
And let us know from center. I don't want any conditioned reports.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks, Ref. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to break now, and we'll be back in just a minute. Coming up next in our second segment of today's Open Air, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be taking your calls and responding to your email questions. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome George from Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening, George.
Good evening, Sherry.
They're in that hotbed of Zen awareness.
We sure are.
Wow.
It's what a great place to be.
It is, isn't it?
It's the only place to be.
One of the great places to be, certainly.
Great places, yeah.
What's
yeah,
going on?
It's so exciting to be able to call in because this is the first Tuesday evening of this year that I haven't been working, that I haven't been at work.
Oh my goodness! Well, congratulations
evening. I just woke up at 8 o'clock and realized, oh my gosh, I can call in.
Good. What's happening in your life there in Pennsylvania?
Well, a lot of good things have been happening. I recently got a full-time job as a spiritual counselor at a place called Kids Peace, working with kids in crisis, mostly teenagers. And I had this thought, you know, how wonderful, I get paid for practicing unconditional love.
Isn't that the best?
It really is the best. Mm-hmm. I'm really loving it. And financially, it's now supportive, whereas before I was working three-quarter time, and it just wasn't, it was out of balance financially.
Mm-hmm.
So that has really helped a great deal.
You think actually what was going on is you were working full-time for three-quarter pay?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I've been doing music, which is something that I haven't, I've always loved to do, and I have talent in that area, and I've just been giving myself the gift of allowing myself to practice at least an hour every day.
Great.
I've been doing some performances here and there, and it's just been great. And also being trained as a spiritual counselor, I've always had this little tiny shingle dangling out there that I'm available for spiritual counseling. Well, now, after the email class, after the Pittsburgh retreat, after all of the latest work that I've done with you and with Living Compassion, I've started to get calls from almost out of the blue from people. So that's been really wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like participation for me is really a big thing right now.
Yeah, that's important, isn't it? In fact, with that sort of thing, I would think it would be very supportive to have the support of the monastery as you're doing that kind of work.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. When I got back from the Pittsburgh retreat, I'd been going to a yoga class one morning a week, and I was all excited about the Pittsburgh retreat, and I was telling my yoga teacher about it. And she got all excited about it, and she said, "Well, let's do something like that here." And I said, my first reaction was, "Well, I can't do that, or we can't do that." And then, that lasted for a split second, and I said, "Yes, let's do that." So we did it, and it was very successful. And people want more, and they want a 2-day retreat, and so that's another thing that's been very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, they don't think this is. What do they think it is that you're doing?
What we call it is a yoga and meditation retreat,
mm-hmm.
And it's modeled. It's actually modeled on my experience with you know, the meditation retreats that I've experienced with you guys, mm-hmm. with us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, the only caution that I would have is that you might want to talk with our process person about this because, you know, it gets to be kind of a tricky place for us when people are out there in the world sort of representing practice.
Uh-huh.
Without actually getting input from us about how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can offer that encouragement.
Well, I would like to do that.
Yeah,
and
maybe
I
talk to
send
Dave,
an email,
who's our...
just in general to... I'm never quite sure who to send the email to, so who would that be?
Well, you just send it in saying what you're doing, and it can be mm-hmm. to Zen at Living Compassion. Mm-hmm. And just say this, and we'll hook you up with Dave, who does all of our processing kind of things like that, and you guys can have a talk about it.
Okay, good. Well, that email has already gone in, I guess.
Oh, great. Well, then it'll be making its way to him.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Well, good. I'm very happy for you.
Yes. And there's this, with all of this going on, I have this fear that lurks in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And that fear is that this is, I've experienced over the last, ever since I was 20 years old, what is termed as bipolar condition.
Mm-hmm. Currently termed that.
What's that?
Currently termed that.
It used to be manic depressive, and now it's bipolar, and hopefully it will get beyond that, but that's what I have experienced. That's been my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I'm in a period of what would be termed as high or manic or whatever, but I'm not really, I don't really fit that description because I don't feel like I have racing thoughts or...
Right, you sound like a regular kind of happy guy.
Yeah, just kind of a happy guy. I'm, pretty much in the moment most of the time, feel pretty much centered, feel very loving toward myself, loving toward other people, a kind of openness, a kind of flow to my life, and it feels very good.
Mm-hmm.
So my concern is that, well, there's another side to this, that sure enough it's going to come around again, and I'm going to go into the dark side of this, and I'm going to be, there's going to be months and months of anxiety and depression in which I have to, struggle through this suffering every day, try to keep a smile on my face, and try to keep my life going, sort of plodding along.
And now is actually not the time to be concerned about that, is it?
Not really, no.
That's right. So if that does happen, and there's nothing to say that it will, but if it does, then the way you are about your life right now would be the very best that you could bring to that.
Mm-hmm.
Loving toward yourself, as loving as you can be to those around you, as present and centered as you can be, there you have it.
Yeah.
And the energy level will be whatever the energy level is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that's conditioning's way. Here you are enjoying this, but it wants you to go out into the future and start worrying about something that might happen out there that is not your life experience right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what more can I do? I meditate every morning. I do yoga.
I would not worry about doing more.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that I felt that I wanted to do, and that would be important for me to do, is to attend the Deepening the Practice retreat that's coming up in a couple of weeks.
Uh huh. Well, that'd be fun.
It would be fun, and I'm ready to do it. Apparently, it's either full or I've been waiting for an email in regard to whether...
Well, you know how slowly justice grinds or whatever that is, and how God works in mysterious ways.
Yes.
Neither of those holds a candle to the monastery. Okay? It is a process.
Yeah.
So... give them a call tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
Give them a call tomorrow and say, hey, got any word for me? And there probably is word, and it just hasn't made its way all the way around the loop to get back to you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that'll be great. Then I'll see you there then.
Yeah, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
I bet it's going to work.
Good.
All right. Thanks, George.
Well, thanks, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, George. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have two callers on hold. And I was wondering if you wanted to say a little bit about the bridge walk before the next call.
Well, I think tomorrow is the cutoff.
Tomorrow is the deadline. That's correct.
Yeah. All of those terms are so unpleasant, aren't they? Deadline, cutoff.
Yes.
I don't know why. Anyway, it's the last day to be able to sign up and get a T-shirt and a lunch. That's the main thing. It is not the last day to be able to arrive, because you can show up there any time up until it's over on Saturday the 23rd.
Yeah.
But we'd love to have people get a T-shirt and lunch and that sort of thing. So
yeah. If
people want to go online, that would be great. There are still, I heard today, that we have 50 of the children, of the 100 children, have partners.
Oh,
so
good.
There are 50 adorable little people left to partner with. And what that partnering means simply is, this is the child who's going to inspire you to go out there and get your family and friends to give you donations to walk across the bridge, or to support the team, or whatever it is that's going on to help us make that reach that goal of $100,000.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So that's it. So
great.
Get on that website.
Get on the website.
www.livingcompassion.org.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a lunch and a T-shirt,
mm-hmm. Register
by tomorrow, September 6th.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Michael.
Yes, sure.
Who's
I'd like
next?
To welcome Cindy from San Mateo. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello there.
Cindy, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Excellent, thanks. What's
Hello,
going
Michael.
On?
Hi.
I'm calling to say that I've been process mapping a lot.
Ah.
And not too surprisingly, find that the process is always the same. Even though when I sit down to write it out, I think I'm looking at something different, and it all comes back to the same thing.
Isn't that just astounding?
So,
when it's stuck inside our heads, it seems so unique and unusual and confusing and all of these, and then we put it on those little post-its and put it on a piece of paper and go,
there it is.
That's how I do everything.
Mm. So I'll tell you what it is, because there's an area that I'm stuck. So what it is, I go from being centered to being not centered.
Mm-hmm.
And then I notice that I can get disidentified enough to pay attention. So that's good. I think, oh, good, I can pay attention. And at that point, I can disidentify further and actually get back to center.
Oh.
Depending on the issue.
Uh-huh.
Certain issues where I have more anxiety and more panic about things that I guess I've been dealing with for a long time, I can watch myself, which is something I didn't do 2 years ago, so I'm watching myself, but what I can very clearly see is that part of me doesn't want to get back to center.
Uh-huh.
And that part of me, it doesn't feel like self-hate. What it's saying is that its center says that there's nothing to fear. But this part of me is saying there is something to fear. And if you relax, it's going to catch you out. That it's helped you in the past not get caught out. And it's if you're just going along and not really having your guard up, these things will happen, you know. And of course, that the story is that I can point to a different bunch of things where it proved positive. You know, if I relaxed a little bit, you know, someone came up from behind and, you know, knocked me. You know, I'm just using that as a metaphor, but that I got caught out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that the part that doesn't want to get back to center says that
there's real danger.
There's real danger, and I'm taking care of you.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I would love to believe that at center, which sounds easier, and
I will tell you, I can give you a money-back guarantee on this one. What you're listening to is what we call egocentric karmic conditioning. And it's fear, and it is fear. It is the experience of fear. And what it fears is that you're going to go to center and you're not going to give it your attention any longer, and it's going to cease to exist. Now, here's the argument. And that is, if something is going to happen, do you want to be alert, awake, attentive, and present? Or do you want to be trying to live outside the moment in a story about what could happen? Now, my guess is if something is going to happen, you would want to be as centered and present and attentive as possible, because that gives you your greatest chance of having at your disposal what you need in order to meet the crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Conditioning says, oh, no, I've got to have you in a story about what could happen. But if I'm going to sneak up behind you, and you're right there, listening, attentive, you know, all your senses are on alert, I'm going to try to sneak up on you, or you're off in a story about something that might happen to you, where am I going to have the better chance of jumping up and grabbing you?
Well, what I am hearing inside of me is like, well, I've got a pretty good, I'm pretty attentive. it's a non-centered attentiveness that
Here's your assignment, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you.
I want you to see what it is that you're attending to.
Mm.
So, yes, you're paying attention. But I'll bet you anything your attention is on what ego is saying and doing. And so it does feel like you're attentive. But it's that same experience of driving down the road and you're having a conversation in your head. Now, are you there? Yeah, you're not off in some, you know, fantasy somewhere. You are aware of what's going on with you. But are you aware of what's around you? And what happens, what to us, most of us have noticed who notice that sort of thing, is that the attention goes to the conversation with conditioned mind and then checks in where we are, goes to the conversation with conditioned mind, checks in where we are. Now, that during that time that it's in the conversation with conditioned mind, there's actually nobody there checking in with what's going on around you.
Well, I'll take that assignment because I've got to the crux of my process here, so I will use that assignment as my next
good
to look.
And keep in mind, it's subtle.
Yes.
Yeah. So remember that what you're turning to for information about this stuff is the very thing that you're trying to see.
Right.
So be careful of having conditioning interpret what's going on with conditioning.
Right.
Don't you love it?
Right.
Don't you feel like Sherlock Holmes?
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Let
All
us
right.
know.
Hey, take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Cindy. You are listening to, actually, you have been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio.
Now, Michael, we stranded somebody.
We did. Somebody dropped off the line, and I'm hopeful that she will call back next week.
I hope so, too. I hope she's number one on the list.
I will make
Maybe
sure.
Maybe we'll put in word that if that person calls next week, she goes to the top of the list.
To the top of the list.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.